Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics. Morgan, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hello.
Hello, everybody. Just some housekeeping. We will be recording and publishing the audio only portion of this meeting. You can sign up for email or listen to previously recorded meetings at our website, simpleactions.net. For those who care to join us, let's open the meeting with the Serenity Prayer. God,
grant me serenity to accept the things that I cannot change, the courage to change the things that I can,
and the wisdom to know the difference. Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance today. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively. Newcomers, is there anyone in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would like to welcome you. On Zoom, you can raise your hand and somebody will chat with you. Anybody in their first 30 days?
Hey, Steve.
Welcome. All right. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that the book Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism based on simple action. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism by taking AA simple action. This is the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. And this evening, we are going to be discussing steps 8 and 9, part 2. Please welcome our panel. We've got Keith and Mike. I didn't get a clear on which one of y'all is going first. Mike, search that out. I'm going to read the first paragraph. A few minutes. Right. Perhaps after.
My name is Keith Gillette, alcoholic.
Keith.
You know, it looks a whole lot different from the very first time I had taken this step to about a year and a half ago. Way different, you know. That's a number of years apart. That's from 1988 to 2021. You know, differences. And the funny thing is, it always boils down to the same thing for me. This is that selfish and inconsiderate habits. That's the way I conduct my. I'm very selfish. I'm very inconsiderate, and I don't take into account anybody else. I just need something, and it doesn't matter if she's a. You know, I love when it says, you know. That they want to keep it that she might be the girl that understands. And I always wondered, why would they put something, you know? And my sponsor told me, he said, she might end up in the rooms. And so, if we're talking bad about her, we don't want to offend her and kick her out of the room. I thought that was pretty funny. You know, it's always been about the same. It's always been about me. It's always been, you know, when I took the inventory and it talked about, you know, the column deals. And in the fourth, I was looking at these relationships with other people as if they were taking inventory tonight about me. And when I did that type of an inventory, and it became about what would they say about your kind if you were being taken an inventory on. And it was embarrassing, it was humiliating, and I was ashamed immediately. And in that respect, you know, this is all about me and relationships with others and God. And there is no God when I have that going on. There's just, what about me trying to get rid of this quick and fast, you know, and I'm not any different than others. You know, I had a friend that, he had a relationship with somebody outside of his marriage for like three decades. And he told me about this one day. And I was like, my God, you know, I can't believe you openly admitted it. And I gave him a look and he's like, listen, you little turd, you want to judge me? How about we just turn you inside out and see what you're made of 24 hours a day, 7 days. And we'll have a panel of alcoholics and decide whether or not you're the spiritual man in the room or not. And he was any different than me. But he was normal. He wasn't an alcoholic. The difference between he and I, though, is when I conduct myself like that, I block myself off from God. And when I do something like that, I have the propensity of needing to take a drink. That's the difference between me and this other guy. That's why my life depends on me doing this, and his may not. I don't know. I don't speak for him. But I know for a fact mine depends on my my access and the continuous path between he and I. And I don't want.
Thanks, Keith. Mike Midget, recovered alcoholic.
Mike.
At first, Dave and I were laughing about that first sentence when he read it. The chances are that we have domestic troubles. I mean, I think anyone that makes it in these rooms have had those one way or another. You know, when I came in the rooms and I'd hear these people say they spent 6 months on their fourth step and all this, and then they had to make another list with their eighth step, I was like, God, I came in these rooms with a gun in my mouth. Like, I can't imagine doing that back there. But then luckily when I get in the big book and I read right when it goes to the eighth step, it's, you already have this list to look at. Simple, simple. The man I asked for help always made this program simple to me. It was a simple spiritual program of action. And I needed that. My life was already hard. I was willing to do to go to any lengths. I promised that man that, but I just could not do the hard road anymore. I needed to be simple. When it talks about, the man's very remorseful at times, especially if he's married to a loyal and courageous girl who's literally gone through hell for him. That buries the hatchet in me right there. You know, there was a part in Bill's story where he says there were many unhappy scenes in our sumptuous apartment. There had been no real infidelity, for loyalty to my wife, helped at times by extreme drunkenness, kept me out of those scrapes. And I always took major pride that I had never like cheated on my wife. But, you know, helped by extreme drunkenness, that's the only reason. But I really was being unfaithful. I mean, when I came in these times and I got caught in my self-pity like that so bad, what was I doing? I'd sneak off to a bar maybe and try to flirt with a bartender. Or, you know, I'd be on some kind of internet looking at women, you know, and all that. And I mean, when it boils down, I mean, that's cheating, right? I was being unfaithful to the person. The woman that knew exactly when to put me in a bathtub of ice or a bathtub of hot water, knew exactly how to hide everything from everyone to make it look like I was a decent person so no one would know that they were locked in this hellhole. That's crazy to me, man. Like, makes me want to cry when I think back about on it. But, you know, I also learned in this program I can't do that either. I can't spend all this time soaking in my bullshit of I've got a day to live this spiritual way and try to do it in every aspect of my life. That's all I got for tonight.
All right, buddy.
Thank you both. All right. The next reading is going to be on page 82. If we have no such complication, there is plenty we should do at home. Sometimes we hear an alcoholic say that the only thing he needs to do is keep sober. Certainly he must keep sober, for there will be no home if he doesn't. But he is yet a long way from making good to the wife or parents whom for years he has so shockingly treated. Passing all understanding is the patient's mothers and wives have had with alcoholics. Had this not been so, many of us would have no homes today, would perhaps be dead. The alcoholic is like a tornado roaring his way through the lives of others. Hearts are broken. Sweet relationships are dead. Affections have been uprooted. Selfish and inconsiderate habits have kept the home in turmoil. We feel a man is unthinking when he says that sobriety is enough. He is like the farmer who came up out of his cellar to find his home ruined. To his wife, he remarked, "Don't see anything the matter here, Ma. Ain't it grand the wind stopped blowing?"
You know, I love the wordings. I don't think anything that I can make up captures it quite as well. You know, I came here thinking that the only thing that I needed to do was just not drink and everything would be okay. I came under the influence that I didn't hurt anybody or let anybody down except for myself. I got sober in the 80s. That was hip. That was being, you know, projected everywhere or puked everywhere, however you want to look at it. And I definitely carried that until I started meeting alcoholics, grown men and grown women that would ask me the question, you know, I hear you talk about you didn't hurt nobody but yourself. And if we were to have to line up everybody that loved you and came into your life, and we lined them all up and we said, hey, since Keith was having such a wonderful time out there drinking, how was it for you? Did you enjoy it? Did you have fun? Did it enhance your life? Or was it like Keith was an absolute tornado roaring? I had a sponsor one time talk about the shop vac of a hose that could be connected to any alcoholic's belly button. And we just go around and we just hook up and suck everything dry. And when we're finally done with it, we just unplug and leave it collapsed and look for the next. It's kind of how I operated and it was never anything personal. It wasn't anything that I set up. It was just my makeup. This is just how I had become a truly selfish and inconsiderate human being. It was all about what I could get out of something and never what I could put back in. You know, and a lot of my amends was not necessarily what I did to somebody, but what I didn't do for others. I was never a son to somebody. I was never a brother or a uncle or anything else for that matter. I kept myself in roles that I was supposed to be, and I kept myself from being there. And I didn't honor anything that I came, anything. I dated a gal in high school that, we dated in middle school, high school, and our junior year just ditched prom and ended up going into another town to do the first time for whatever we were going to do that night. And God bless her. It was hers. It was her first time. And we had this commitment to each other that we wouldn't see nobody or anything. And she had done that. I didn't do that, but she did. And so we ended up consummating the night and she was crying because she thought it was beautiful. I thought she was crying because she was disappointed. And so I got pissed. And so I said something about it. And I said some derogatory things and I destroyed that little girl's life. You know, I took everything that she had thought about. That was very important to somebody like her. But for me, it was just one more thing that just went into the mix, something else that I could take. And then when I sober up, I think that there should be a band out there for me to play, you know, that Keith comes home for the first time, you know, and you know, a parade and a band and all that stuff. And I think that everybody should just be so grateful that I stopped drinking. They just stopped drinking. That now the nightmare is how I lived and conducted. But because I hadn't taken these steps, the nightmare wasn't over. I continued on without having doing it. And I think that's the worst thing in the world, is to continue to live like I'm drunk and not have a drop or an excuse, other than I'm an extreme example of self-will. There is no glass ceiling to my selfishness, and then there's no bottom to the pit. It is everlasting. And I could warp this thing on and on and on about how selfish and self-centered that I am. I could warp it so badly where I'm convincing you that it's your fault. Now they call it gaslight. I don't know what they call it. I sure as heck mastered it without even knowing it. I am a torn, you know, and if it hadn't have been for my mom and brothers, you know, I would have died. I would have literally died. January 1st of 87, I was begging for a place to go because I was living in the streets of Detroit. You know, and if it hadn't been for that mom that stood there and taken one more chance, just one more chance with somebody like me, probably because I was her son, her firstborn, you know, is the only reason, I would have died the night because nobody else was taking me in. It was the blizzard of 86 going into 87, and I had nowhere else to go. And I couldn't get drinks, and I couldn't get a friend to take me in. My mom did. And she's been a fan of Alcoholics Anonymous as a result of this two step. She's been a fan of yours because she's seen, you know, and she's made it very apparent that part of that amends is me not stopping doing this. So that sucks. Now I'm on the hook. Turn it over to Mike.
Thanks, Keith. You know, I read this. I love how the big book kind of imprints stuff in us. It repeats it over and over and over again. When I read this, these two paragraphs we read, it brings me back to there is a solution. And, you know, it's talking about how they came up with this as an illness and the illness of these sorts. You know, when you take a total asshole and you put them in a room and they say, oh, this guy's got, you know, stage 5 terminal cancer. It's like the oxygen gets sucked out of the room and everybody all of a sudden is like, oh my gosh, they want to hug this guy. But if I go in the middle of that room and I go, hey guys, I'm an alcoholic. Like, we don't give a shit, right? And that's exactly what I read when I read this part is, you know, I'm that tornado that just takes and takes and takes. And then the minute I start doing the right thing, I want a trophy, kind of like what Keith was getting. I want to be important. I want to be special. You know, look at me. I remember when I hit 2 months sober and my sponsor looked at me and he said, how long has it been since you've been 2 months sober? And I couldn't even think of it. And, you know, I kind of started crying and I felt real special. And he's like, well, that ain't shit because, you know, now you're just doing what you should have been doing the rest of your life. And I was like, ooh. And that hit. And where it says, you know, certainly he must, or blah, blah, blah. The only thing he needs to do is to keep sober. Back in there is a solution that tells me the elimination of my drinking is but a beginning. You know, I don't know about y'all, but when I quit drinking, whatever little bit of time I could muster up when I was out there, it was hell. I mean, the people that were begging me to quit drinking were begging me to drink again because they couldn't be around me. I was irritable, restless, and discontent. But I have a much more chore ahead of me now. You know, I mean, a much bigger thing to do. I mean, to come in here and read a big book, which obviously I've read a lot. My sponsor made me read a lot, which I'm so thankful for. But it's almost gotten easy to sit up here in front of you and act like I know something and like I'm cool in AA because I can quote some big book shit and I'm doing it all right. But I mean, I've got to go out there to all these people that I was a tornado to and be a good person. And that's still hard. I mean, that's hard. You know, the amends were a first part, but I mean, it wasn't a big surprise. It was a big surprise to me that everyone knew I was already fucked up. I go make this amend. They're like, yeah, we know, you know, and that was shocking to me. But now I've got to earn trust back from people and I've got to go show people that I'm doing what I'm saying in this meeting. That's pretty challenging, but that's where I find my reward. That's all I got.
All right, both. All right. The next reading is going to be on page 83. Yes, there's a long period of reconstruction ahead. We must take the lead. A remorseful mumbling that we are sorry won't fit the bill at all. We ought to sit down with the family and frankly analyze the past as we now see it, being very careful not to criticize. Their defects may be glaring, but the chances are that our own actions are partly responsible. So we clean house with the family, asking each morning in meditation that our Creator show us the way of patience, tolerance, kindliness, and love. The spiritual life is not a theory. We have to live it. Unless one's family expresses a desire to live upon spiritual principles, we think we ought not to urge them. We should not talk incessantly to them about spiritual matters. They will change in time. Our behavior will convince them more than our words. We must remember that 10 or 20 years of drunkenness would make a skeptic out of anyone.
Again, Keith Gillette, alcoholic. So I had a great grandmother. She was born in 1900 and she walked out of Auschwitz with five kids and at almost 40 years old, And she was a Polish Jew and she walked out with these kids and her husband didn't make it and her father didn't make it and her mother didn't. And she made it to the British troops and the rest was history. She ended up coming to America eventually and brought my mother's uncles with her and my grandfather with, and they set up in Hamtramck. And like I said, I sobered up in 1987. She was 87 years old by then. And I had never known anything about that grandmother, anything. And she loved us. She loved us more than anything else, you know. And she watched me terrorize, you know, as her great grandson. And because the other ones didn't have kids. And we were it, me and my brother, and my sister. And she saw me terrorize every single person in the house. And in the community and never show up, you know, finding every excuse to leave events early all the time. And I remembered about 7 years, I came home from Hawaii. I was stationed out there. I was 7 years sober. And my great grandmother came into town and I was so excited because it was the same time as my anniversary was. And I come up to her and I tell her, I said, great grandma, would you like to come to my meeting with me? And She goes, well, why you go to those meetings? I said, well, I'm getting a chip. She goes, for what? I said, I've been sober 7 years. She goes, huh, really? I said, yeah, it's been 7 years. She goes, well, what do you get for 94? For 94 years, what do you get for not ever touching a drink and not acting like you? Not acting like me. It's 7 years, the amount of atonement. And when it talks about 10 to 20 years would make of drunkenness would make a skeptic out of anyone. You know, talk is cheap until you get a lawyer, is what I was told in early recovery. Talk is cheap and BS walks, you know, when it comes to action. What I am speaks so loud that nobody can hear a word you say. And what I'm saying is what I'm frankly analyzing at this moment, now that I'm acting or attempting to act like a spiritual human being, somebody that has its facts and an ability to convey, you know, some selflessness in a conversation with somebody, you know, why I'm able to frankly analyze the past, because now I see it in a different light, because I took them off the hook. Column two started to disappear when column four showed up. What they did to me meant nothing because what I had done to them. And that's what I was there to discuss. I wasn't there to excuse or forgive or to bring about or give the and buts. This is why I did what I, it was to frankly analyze my conduct and what I had done, disregarding them entirely. What does that mean? As if it never existed is what that means for a guy like me, as if they had done nothing. And you know, what's funny is that they would have never made the second column if they weren't invited into my life and they weren't something to me to begin with. You don't make my list unless you were involved with me. I didn't make the list until I stopped being involved with you and became overly involved with myself. No God whatsoever in my life. You know, so I talk to these people with patience, tolerance, and kindness. I ask God to go with me in these situations to remind me what my role is when I'm sitting down with somebody, you know, to help me be patient, because I'm talking to somebody that doesn't have a 12-step program, probably. And I'm expecting them to know what the 12 and 12 and the big books, my sponsor, and why we're doing what we're doing. No, I'm asking for some patience with them so that I can make this right with them. Spiritual life is not a theory. I have to live it. My sponsor says I have to live it 24 hours a day, 24/7, or else I perish. And he's right. But more importantly, other people perish when I don't. Because I don't just affect me. I'm not that selfless kind of guy. When I'm suffering, you're going to suffer regardless of whether I choose it or not. It's just that's how it goes. Mike talked about it. You know, I affect others like no non-alcoholic ever could. You know, with cancer, all are sorry. But for the alcoholic, it's like, let's lock him up. He can go get Ben. Oh, and I suffer. I don't want to be like this. I've had scores of alcoholics say, I'm just so selfish and self-centered. That's what I am to the core, blah, blah, blah. I am that way because there is no God. But when there is a God, I am able to act opposite of that. And what does that mean? If I was truly selfish and self-centered and a sociopath, this would mean nothing to me. I could care less, but I care very deeply. And it's disturbing when I sober up and I see the damages. And I want so desperately, you know, it tells me to watch out for stuff like that, though, because you could go to somebody that doesn't want your amends, that is openly and physically conveyed to you that they don't want nothing. I'm to take the lead, yes, to those who want it. Tore up a man's life one day. I was 16 trying to help me, my therapist. And he wanted to talk to me about drinking. And I was cocky and I was arrogant. And I said, we're not here to talk about my drinking, Bob. It's not his name, but we're not tired of talking about that. He goes, you need to watch your mouth, son. I'm like, I need to watch my mouth. I think we're effing done. That's what I think. He goes, we're not done. I'm like, watch. And I walked out and I told my mom that this man put his hands on me. And the man went away for 5 years and I sobered up. And 7 years later, I go up to the guy. I knew where he worked, destroyed his family. His wife left him, his kids, you know, he's on the predator watch list up in Michigan. And I go to where he's working. I got to make this right. Because that's the right thing to do. I must take the lead, right? Out of context. I go to him. I say, hey, Bob, do you remember me? He goes, I know if you are. And that was 7 years ago. I had a high and tight. I was a Marine at the time. I looked what I thought was totally different. But I guess somebody that does that to you, you know how they look for the rest of your life. He said, what do you want? I said, I've done a real bad thing to you and I want to make it right. I'll tell anybody who's cares to hear. I'll go in front of a court. I'll go take and get a, I don't care if they've locked me up. I'll do whatever it takes. You know what you can do? What can I do for it? You can fuck off and die. I never want to see you again. I said, well, that's probably going to happen. In the arrogant way I say things. I said, I can make that happen. Hopefully in 80 years, but, you know, so I left and I thought it was important about 10 more years later. Now I'm super sober and I go back to that same hometown and he's doing the same job, stacking potato chips on the same aisle. And I super sober, going to go up to him. I'm going to make it right. For who? For that guy or for me? You know the answer. And so I go up to him. I said, Bob, do you remember? He goes, I thought I told you the last time. This is 10 years later. I thought I told you the last time you can go and die. I told you, leave me alone, please. I've had enough. And I've not talked to him since. There are some rights, there's some wrongs that I can't ever right, except for leave people alone. You know, and that's what that means to me. A remorse, what was I there to make a remorseful mumbling that I'm sorry? How about I did something and I took something that I can't give back? How about leave them alone? It's what they call that being stoic, shoulder that. With God's help, I can. So
that. You know, when I came in this program, I thought I was the biggest, baddest dude out. I'd done shit y'all hadn't done. I could take anybody. And, you know, what I come to find out is the manliest thing I'd ever done in my life up to that point was the night I asked my sponsor for help. I asked another grown man on a date, and that's the flat out manliest thing I'd ever done. And, you know, the book talks about the hopelessness and the alcoholic torture. And when I came in the program, I was at the jumping off place where I couldn't imagine my life with or without alcohol. And the problem for me was at the end of my drinking, it wasn't providing me with ease and comfort. You know, I was no longer taking the deep breath. My shoulders were no longer dropping. And that was a scary place to me. And that was the only place that got me to the point where I'd ask for help. When I started reading this book with my sponsor and showing them that I was willing, you know, the big book only tells us a period of time to take the steps in one spot, at least that I've found. I keep reading it over and over and looking for it, but it's in how it works. You know, if we've decided we want what you have and are willing to go to any length, then we're ready to take certain steps. And I'm thankful that my sponsor wasn't playing God with my life and knew it was life or death, and he took me through these steps rapidly. What I've come to find out from sponsoring other men and helping other people in this program is everybody comes in here and knows the amends part, right? They'd either seen it on TV or heard it or something, and they all immediately want to go out and say they're sorry. It's like they look for it right up to the point where it's time to do the amends and they find out it's not a sorry. Then they're like, oh, well, hold on. Let's take a deep breath. Let's back up here. What am I doing? And, you know, I found myself in that same spot because I had dumped all this stuff. I'd spoke it out loud. I'd asked God honestly to take it away. And I get to this place where I've actually got to go out and try to mend some wrongs. And my sponsor was very clear that I'm not to say sorry at all. He said, you've been sorry your whole life. You're not going to be sorry now. This is about cleaning myself. I've got to trust God, clean house. And you know, the book tells us 9 out of 10 times we're going to be surprised. And that's what I shared last time was, you know, I was pretty shocked that people already knew I was a fuck up. And when I go out and I start making these, what I find are the ones that I dread the most and I'm trying to put off the most are the ones that help me. When I came in this program, I was going through a nasty divorce. I had put my wife and kids on the street. You know, it was so bad that they left me with the house. They just abandoned that place. And from what I hear from a lot of other people, that's not that common in a man's situation, but you know, when they did it, I don't think I had the ability to love or feel anymore left in me. Like when I came home from work that day and they were gone, I mean, I just felt a relief. Like, shit, this is great. And, you know, one of those hardest amends, there were a lot of stuff I had on my list. And, you know, like Keith was getting at, I've got no right to save my skin at another person's expense. And there were a lot of amends I put on there that I put on for that reason. You know what I mean? Like, I'm going to go out and do this because it's going to save my fun, be very detrimental to them. And I'm glad my sponsor walked me through that. But, you know, one of the ones I was dreading the most was my wife. We were in the middle of a nasty divorce. I wasn't allowed to see my kids for good reason. And the reason I was so full of fear for it was because I had to tell her. So I remember, you know, writing her, we weren't even allowed to talk. And I wrote her anyways and said, you know, can I have a minute of your time as part of my recovery? And I was expecting a big fuck you, you know, but she said, okay. So I showed up at the place she was living. I knocked on the door. She answered, you know, arms crossed, ready to hear this bullshit. And I don't remember exactly what came out, but, you know, I was a bumbling idiot at this time. I had liver failure. I had this foam thing going on in the corner of my mouth, and I couldn't stop shaking all the time. And I said, you know, I was not a good husband, and I was not a good father. As a matter of fact, I was nothing. And I couldn't think of anything else to say. And my sponsor always told me to back it up. He told me, you know, if they say something back, it's my time to eat shit. You stay there and eat it. Even if their defects are glaring, that's none of my fucking business. I'm cleaning my side of the street. Sorry. Excuse the language. It's one of my defects. God's trying to remove every day. You know, she didn't say anything. She stood there and looked at me. And so my sponsor always told me to ask if I left anything out at that point. And I said, if I left anything out, she said, I'm in shock that you actually said you're she shut the door. And I had never felt so free and powerful when I walked away from that house. Because I was expecting this major thing. I'm that important that I expect someone to come battle me, you know? I'm like, she's going to give it to me and all this, and I'm working it up in my head. And it's basically a thank you. And I left that, and I went on to do my others. It gave me the courage, you know? It gave me the courage to go face these other people and go do these other things. Now, in the second paragraph, the spiritual life is not a theory. And I was told by my sponsor, if it's in italics, it's probably pretty important. So like highlight it, underline it, make sure you do it. Or if it says must or vital or you're going to die, it's probably important. And we have to live it, you know. And I think at this point in my life, this program was happening so quick, you know. And when Bill says his experience was sudden and profound and this most minutes gradual, what I've found is to most of us, it's sudden and profound. But we want it to be gradual because, at least for me, my experience is, when I went through these steps, I wanted this lightning bolt, and I wanted to God sit right in front of me, even though Keith can't see him and talk to him. I want him to be here because I'm Mike, and he should be right here. That'll blot out the things that happened. Like when I woke up the next morning, and for the first time since I was 8 years old, I did not want to put any substance in my body, and I woke up and cried because I didn't know that feeling, and I didn't know what that meant. I'll blot that out because I want a fucking lightning, and I want you to come down here and give me some powers. You know, when I walked outside crying, I was in this little apartment someone in the program had gotten for me because I had given everything away. And I walked outside and opened that door and felt the air and heard the birds. And I was like, man, this is beautiful. I don't know if I've ever felt the air or heard the bird. I'll blot that out because I want some, but that was sudden and profound. Just like the feeling of every one of these amends was sudden and profound. But I had to take action to do them. And the minute I took that simple action, sudden improvement every time. You know, I was sharing with Keith briefly before we started. It says how we shouldn't talk incessantly about spiritual matters. They will change in time. Our behavior will convince them more than our words, you know. A little over a year in this program, my wife came back to me with the kids, right? And I asked her why she did that. She said, if she dealt with me through all that, no other woman's going to have the good side of me. And I said, fair enough. But, you know, my wife was raised on one side of her family. They were like very anti-God. You don't even say religion. You don't say God anything. And this past year, she's been having these experiences, and I've just stepped aside because they're hers to have, you know, and she's been searching for God. And it's been the most freaking beautiful. Like when I help these guys and they do it, it's freaking beautiful. And I get these new experiences, right? And I grow in effectiveness and understanding. But to watch her take this journey, of course, still selfishly, I want to think it's because I'm doing so great now. And now she wants to find God, but she's doing it. And what I've found is I learned more about God from her and my six-year-old that has no clue than I do trying to search for. I get to see that impact on them. And that's such a gift of this program. You know, we went to a family we went as a family to church, which I just realized is something I've longed for my whole life. And I'm not a religious person, but I've longed for that. I've been jealous of people. Oh, it was so cool when families got dressed up at church. And now I get to experience that because they're trying to find this God their own way. Lost my train of thought. That's all I got.
Probably.
Thank you, Bo.
Thank you, brother.
Oh, I think I might just, I'm going to do both of them. And then sure. That way, because we got like left, the next reading, actually these last two readings will both also be on page 83. There may be some wrongs we can never fully right. We don't worry about them if we can honestly say to ourselves that we would write them if we could. Some people cannot be seen. We send them an honest letter. And there may be a valid reason for postponement in some cases, but we don't delay if it can be avoided. We should be sensible, tactful, considerate, and humble without being servile or scraping. As God's people, we stand on our feet. We don't crawl before anyone. The last reading. If we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we are halfway through. We are going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity and we will know peace. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. Are these extravagant promises? We think not. They are being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. They will always materialize if.
So I did touch on there are some wrongs that can never be fully righted, and we don't worry about them if we can honestly say to ourselves that we would right them if we. And recently I was just reminded of that. I had an amends that came out that I needed to make to my 22-year-old daughter, and I made every attempt to. And I think it's somehow different all of a sudden because it's a daughter and it's a father, you know, instead of one of you or my fellows, you know. And so I made every attempt to sit down and make amends, and I did, and it wasn't in her eyes and in her mouth. She simply said it wasn't good enough. And it was crushing, you know, it was crushing. And I was chatting it up with this old timer guy, and he's like, "So you made amends, right?" "Yes, I did." She didn't accept it. I said, no. He goes, "It's none of your business. Just keep it moving, Keith." I was just like, it's pretty rude. He goes, "That's what it says. How about let's just do what it says and see what it happens as a result of it. You know, let's quit being all emotional about it. You know, I know it's emotional. It's hard, but it's no longer your problem. If she doesn't want to accept it, you've done everything in your power, everything at your disposal to try to write this. Now let God and time do what it's supposed to do and leave it alone." It was amazing. And I was wondering at the time, it tells me over and over not to delay nor postpone, not to evade. It tells me that, I must take the lead. It's not about whether I feel comfortable enough making. I don't understand that. I may have thought like that at one point to go at my own time, spiritually fit and ready enough to meet these people who really should and could and have me arrested. And thank God I've had good sponsorships that remind me that that's not what it says. It must not. That I have a God. You got a God. Not about you. It's about you and a relationship with God and others. So if they do punch you in the face, so be it. But you're there to write it. You're there to be uncomfortable and make them comfortable. Haven't you done it the opposite way long enough? Made yourself comfortable and everybody else around you totally miserable and uncomfortable. So how about let's take the lead and take the punch? You're right. And every hard amends that I've ever made, every one that, like Mike said, 9 out of 10, the surprising thing happens. Convinced still it's not going to be 9 out of 10. It's going to be like 1 out of 10. It's going to go well. And the rest of the 9 are going to gang up and beat the snot out of me. Right. But I haven't had any kind of horrible things. My ex-wife could have had me arrested based on a clerical error. And on her part, it was my responsibility to make sure that that clerical error didn't happen. But I just, nobody was barking and nobody was talking. So I didn't pursue nothing. And I didn't even think about it, quite honestly. Squeaky wheel gets the grease and it wasn't squeaking. So I didn't pay no mind to it. And all of a sudden I get arrested for missing an alimony payment that really didn't get missed. Just lack of action on my part. I don't know where I was going with that, but anyways, so we get down here to some of the promise. You know, when I thought these only applied really when I first took started doing the ninth step, that you only receive this way back when you first do it. But at 35 years sober now, I was amazed before I was halfway through with my list of amends, some like 150 amends that I had to make back in June when I sat down with my sponsor and I hammered out this list. I was shocked and I was embarrassed, you know, that sober 90% of my life has been in AA and I owe this many amends. What the? Before I was even a quarter of the way through, I was amazed at what was happening. That freedom, that release, that relief, that ease and comfort started to slip back in almost instantaneously. You know, I started getting drunk on the spirit of the, you know, that shot after a long, hard week on a Friday night when you totally deserve it and you finally belt it back. And that sensation is the sensation that I was looking for and the sensation that I desperately needed in sobriety. And I got it half before I was halfway through the list. I started to know a new freedom and a new happiness all of a sudden. It wasn't based on whether or not my 401k and my portfolio looked the way it should at somebody at my stage of this development. It wasn't, you know, based on my success or not success in the, you know, financial world all of a sudden. You know, if you're sober this long, you should have X, Y, and Z. It wasn't based on that anymore. It was based on the fact that I was now getting right again with God. And I started feeling like I was walking hand in hand. And I was finally starting to do again what I was taught and forgot and let up so many years ago. It's so easy. It is so easy to do, to let up on the spiritual program of action and rest on. Life comes fast and life doesn't care and doesn't slow down because I need some time to take it in. I don't always make 10-step amends. And so therefore, over time, it goes to my 4-step. You know, my left step goes to my 4th step. All this stuff goes back to my 4th step because just back to life is that life comes quick. And sometimes I don't want to wake up and do this stuff. Haven't I done it long enough, God? Don't I get a break? Slips in there. Why should I have sick kids? I'm sober, trying to help people out for so many years. I'm sober this long. Fire. So pissed that these people die. And it goes and it stacks and it stacks and it stacks, blotting out, you know, the possibility of sobriety and serenity in God's existence. And it gets replaced with just parroting shit that I've been parroting for 30 plus years. Because I know what it says. I just parrot it. And maybe if I parrot it long enough, it'll slip in and it'll start working again until it doesn't. And then the gun's back in your mouth. And the thought of wrecking your car in that big old construction pile on 264 and 64. Why not? You know? Before I was halfway through, I started to feel this again. Back in June, back in April, I started getting relief again. And I started getting excited about not killing myself and not drinking anymore still. And it started to take on another shape. I started getting excited about this. My wife and my kids weren't burdens to me all of a sudden. That was crazy. My job wasn't lucky to have me. You know, it was the other way around all of a sudden. I'm like, God, how did that happen? I don't know. Self-seeking started to slip away. You know, I hadn't realized how self-seeking I was. I had become. Towards the close of 2021, didn't want what I had. I didn't want what I had. And today, with all the problems and all the difficulties, I do want what I have. You know, I am blessed to have the crap in my life that might seem crappy to other people. I have 2 beautiful kids to raise. I got a wife that is there as my partner to help raise these kids. And it is difficult as shit. I don't go to but 2 meetings a week. And if I'm in any more, I don't belong in more than 2 meetings. I got responsibilities that I've been blessed with, you know, and I have a responsibility to them. I love what AA says, a much more deeper demonstration of these principles lies outside of AA, my respective home, occupation, and affairs. So what? I look good in AA if my life is crumbling. So what? I get asked to speak anywhere or sponsor anybody. If I can't do this at those places with the help of God and others, I don't belong in AA in 30 meetings a week or 10 meetings a week. That ain't going to change anything if I can't bring this shit home or to my job or to the gym that I go to or the grocery stores that I'm in. So that's how this started unfolding. These promises started to develop as a result of doing these steps. That starts to come in, the access, the ability to be what God intended on me. Good stuff. What about you, Mike?
So that time more?
Quick wrapper-upper. A couple minutes.
I mean, the end of that first paragraph, I remember asking my sponsor, what am I going to be like, a sissy the rest of my life? Is this what it is? And, you know, it says we should be sensible, tactful, considerate, and humble without being servile or scraping. As God's people, we stand on our feet. We don't crawl before anyone. And that's what I find. I find power through God, not from this program. And the more I admit to myself that God has done all this for me, I didn't do crap for it. He did it. I mean, I took some actions, but it was only because he pulled me through it. I couldn't have done it without that. And that's what gives me that power to stand up. You know, when I read these ninth step promises, I mean, these things happen so much. And every day, if I choose to look for them, they're happening all around me. You know, this is just my experience. Other people have different experience. But when I went through these steps, you know, in Bill's story, it says he had to strive to perfect and enlarge his spiritual life, you know. And that's what I was told to do, to strive for perfection. I couldn't be spiritually perfect or I'd be God. I'd already played that game and it didn't work. But I've got to strive for it. And I was told I would never have to take these steps again if I did 10, 11, and 12 after 9 every day for the rest of my life to the best of my ability. And fortunately, that's what I've tried to do. Do I slip? Yeah. And I'm usually the second person that knows. Usually my wife finds out first, or the people I work with, or maybe my sponsees, they'll remind me that I'm not doing 10, 11, and 12. But I mean, 1, 2, and 3, I can't really do again unless if I choose not to do this work. If I choose not, then I've got to go back to those. But step 10 takes me right back to 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9. It gives me 4 things to do every time it happens, and it tells me it's going to happen. You know, when I took that 6th and 7th step, it was just getting rid of the bullshit I had just told my sponsor. There's a bunch of stuff I didn't even remember when I did that. It all popped up afterwards, and it pops up every day. I'm not cured of my character defect. I've got a daily reprieve again. It happens real quick. When I don't take that daily reprieve, I come back. I'm back to that unlovely creature it talks about. But I know we're out of time, so I'm not going to bab too much. But this program saved my life. I'm forever thankful for it, too, forever in debt to it. And thanks for listening to it.
Thank you both. All right, we're going to pass the 7th tradition baskets. 7th tradition states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the 7th tradition is at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members that not only their group, but also their inner group, central office, local area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Our common welfare, a word about safety, our group endeavors to provide a safe for all attend encourages in here to contribute to fostering a secure and welcoming environment in which our can take a couple quick AA-related announcements. EMAC. Thank you very much, Mike.
Mike Midget, recovered alcoholic. My home group, the Sandbridge Big Book, on November 8th is celebrating their 45th year anniversary. And Al-Anon will be celebrating like 37 or something. We'll have starts at 7 on that Tuesday. We'll have food, and then there will be an AA speaker and an Al-Anon speaker. Come drive out. It's the same distance I drive to all your meetings. It's not that bad. You can if you want, but there'll be plenty.
Seriously, take some of these with you back.
All right. Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group are in need of a sponsor, please hang out after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hands. Woo! Right. Literature is available right there on the hand sanitizing station that doesn't have hand sanitizer. It's really around the corner if you need that. Please see me or a home group member if you need any books. If you can fold it, it's free. Sponsorship questions, sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, we will be here after we close the meeting. Please feel free to talk to any of us. If you're shy on Zoom, you can send an email to info@simpleactions.net. Reminder, smokers, please use the butt can provided outside and stay well away from the church doors. All meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. Meeting after the meeting, all are invited and encouraged to join us for fellowship at the meeting after the meeting that will be held at Plaza del Sol on 22nd and Colonial, straight shot down Colonial. If you hit the train tracks, you've gone too far, right there on the right. In closing, let's thank the panel again. After the Lord's Prayer,
Ethan,
we can circle up just how we used to, try to make a little oval or something, you know, and we'll close it out with the Lord's Prayer. Our Father,
who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name, thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory.